It's a new year, 2025, and you're probably thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How can I make this the best year ever? How am I going to build something for myself? I'm dying to be my own boss or see if I can turn this business idea I've been kicking around into a reality. But I don't know how to make that happen. Shopify is the key, and let me tell you how. The best time to start your new business is right now. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates. No coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. Shopify makes it easy to manage your growing business. They help with details like shipping, taxes, and payments from one single dashboard, allowing you to focus on the important stuff, like growing your business. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Established in 2025. Has a nice ring to it, doesn't it? Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle to start selling with Shopify today. shopify.com/redcircle.
Right, welcome back to a very special episode of Friends from Work Plus for a few reasons. One, we are discussing Daredevil, which always feels special, but we're discussing Daredevil on what may be the eve of Daredevil's first, strictly speaking, MCU appearance. We've obviously seen Matt Murdock. Some in No Way Home. If you've seen the No Way Home Extended Edition, you've seen a tad more of Matt Murdock. But last week on She-Hulk, we saw that yellow helmet for the first time. And we're thinking that soon here we may be seeing more than that. So that's special. But also it's special because whether or not you guys will ever be able to see this, this is one of the first times, I guess really the first time that Kyle and I have done a little video chat podcast here. So I'm getting to look at his beautiful face without anybody else to distract us. No interview nonsense for me to have to focus on. I can just all Kyle all day.
We're beta testing this new technology. Welcome to the 21st century, Rob. We're a little late, I feel like,
wow. But
excited to be here.
Is this what the Jetsons felt like? I am excited to be here, though. I've been looking forward to season two and to this part of season two of Daredevil the most. Not because I think that it is the best by any means, but, you know, it's just one of those things where you hear so many hot takes about something and you get so much separation from it. And I started wondering, like, how much of this season do I even remember accurately?
Sure.
I feel like whenever we get to season three, we're both going to be in agreement that it's pretty fantastic. And so that's going to be fun to talk about, but a little bit less suspense for me. But this has been, you know, like we talked about last time, there are a lot of things that I do like about season two, but this is where I think that a lot of people would say things go off the rails. This is where a lot of the Defenders setup comes in, so I'm looking forward to digging into this one.
When I watched this for the first time ever, I plowed through these episodes. If you remember, season one, we were still trying to pace it to where I only watched three or four, right. And then we recorded. But then towards the end of that season, I just gave up on that. So season two, right, was something that I literally watched, I think, in a day or two.
And yeah, because you then started season three and were a little confused.
Yes.
And one I episode. Had you go back and watch Defenders. Right.
But I've actually kind of enjoyed watching it in these three chunks because when you separate it like this, it becomes really apparent that the makers themselves almost separated it like this. I mean,
right?
It feels like when we stopped last episode after four episodes of Daredevil, we thought, okay, mm-hmm. that's basically one season. That could have been a film right there.
Right.
It almost feels the same here, five yeah. through eight, because, you know, at the very end of eight, you get the Wilson Fisk tag, right. and that almost feels like another story now, like another right. teaser.
Yeah, in the same way the Elektra scene was a teaser for this chunk.
Yeah, it's like they intentionally made it that way. Three very separate stories. And I don't remember feeling that way with season one. And definitely season three, I think, is more of just one arc.
Right, right.
This feels like they cut into three sections, so.
Yeah, I totally agree. Which there's a part of me that, you know, remembering how they end this, only vaguely, like I know that there is a, you know, a moment where a lot of the storylines from throughout the season kind of come together. And so I'm curious how it holds up at the end. But I kind of, at this point, I had the same thought. I sort of respect the approach because I think that season one, while I think it's a better season in large part just because of the amount of D'Onofrio that we get in it, it's also, you're right, like I think that season one felt like more one story and then this like random episode with Stick thrown in. Oh, where like that, you know what
episode.
I mean? Like it didn't, mm-hmm. it felt like it had no place really.
Yep. The only thing I can equate that to is Stranger Things season two, where right, they didn't know right. exactly what they were going to do in the future. Mm-hmm. So they threw that one episode in where Elle leaves and meets all right. the other numbers in Chicago or right. something, I think.
Yeah, I think it's Chicago. And which I think...
Then they never come back to it. They never come back to
although,
it.
Although, I've heard, and I who knows, because I don't think it's at all finished yet, but I've heard that the Duffer Brothers have said that they're going to return to it at some point, which is funny, before the end of the series.
If they do, it's only because they're trying to do a Thor Dark World thing where they're like sticking it to it. Right. Like, hey, now right. that you hated right. that here, there's no way they planned that because you don't set one oh, episode no, like that no. and then go, hey, by the way, 4 years later, we're going to come back
right.
to that
especially
one.
After you have two seasons that don't even
yeah,
like,
have anything
hint
to
at
do
it.
With it.
But yeah, here I totally agree. I think, so I mean, even if you don't, and I know that your mantra when it comes to Daredevil is really like less of the hand stuff. But I think even if you have that position, there's a part of me that feels like this is maybe preferable and that it at least feels like its own thing. Like it doesn't feel like they just had to sprinkle that in. The way that they at least try to have it weave in with what's going on with Matt's personal life, I respect. Like they're, you know, they were juggling a lot of things. It's funny, like I looked at the, like if you look up, go to the Wikipedia page for season two, the promo poster that they show is this just super, super busy. Like there are like 40 people on this poster.
And 27 of them are ninjas.
Right. No, I mean, literally. And it's like the perfect representation of what the season is. Like, it's like, yeah, they were doing a lot. But again, you know, like if you're going to do a lot, I think this is probably the way to go. Like, just make little individual. It you know what it almost feels like? You've played, the DLC for the Spider-Man PlayStation 5 game, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I've
or play,
done
PlayStation
all of it.
4 game. So not talking about the Miles stuff, but just the three stories that follow the original game.
Sure.
You know how like each one of the, like it's all one story with like Hammerhead and Silver Sable and Black Cat, but mm-hmm. each one ends with kind of a like
final boss
cliffhanger and, intro and, yeah. and like an intro to the next level
yeah.
Where it's like one, I think ends with like you thinking one character, I don't want to spoil anything. You think one character's dead and then also being introduced to another. And that sure. I kept thinking about that through here because it feels that it's like, it's one story, but it feels almost like they could have put these out in individual chunks like that.
All right. So before we dive into the actual episode, episode five here is where we'll start. My last big picture thought is I probably want to rein back some of the hate I gave this, at least off air to you.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't love this chunk of episodes, but It was less ninja-y than I remember it being. It was a little less mythical. They get to the discussion about the hole in the war, I think later on. It's like 3 or 4 episodes into this chunk. It's not the first episode.
Yeah, and it's the 3rd or 4th, I think.
The Elektra Karen thing worked a little bit better for me than I remember, especially since you told me Elektra kind of being a girlfriend for Daredevil, Karen being a girlfriend for Matthew. So it's not my favorite part of Daredevil. In fact, it might be my least favorite part of Daredevil, but it's not a train wreck like I maybe portrayed in previous episodes. So let's get into Daredevil Season 2, Episode 5.
Episode 5 is entitled Kenbaku. It was written by Flora Sigismondi, was written by Lauren Schmidt Hisrick. Interesting because I think that those are both new names to the Daredevil show, at least for us as we've been marching through. There were some repeats prior to this. And yeah, this is the, you know, following up on where we left last episode, this is where we kind of find out who Elektra is. A big chunk of this episode is told through flashbacks. So you're kind of getting a little bit of Daredevil dealing with the reintroduction of Elektra. And then you're also finding out kind of where she fits in the narrative that we got of Matt's life in season one, right? Because they did a pretty good job in season one of being like, you know, this is how it was when he was with his dad and their stick. And then he's at Columbia Law with Foggy. And then now he went to the big law firm to practicing. And so they kind of wedge in like, but during college, he had this crazy thing going on. So we get that. And then through the kind of modern Elektra elements, we find out about Roxxon, which I had totally forgotten showed up in the show. Again, shows up in the Spider-Man games.
And my original note has "Let's freaking go" by it because I think I was in the middle of playing the Miles Morales game, so I was like, "Oh, look at all this connection."
Well, and I think you know, it's interesting with Loki, right?
Mm-hmm.
I like the idea that those would be the same entities. They don't have to be; it doesn't really matter. I doubt that we'll ever be told, but it's kind of another element of some connective tissue.
It's another perfect example of the connective tissue being there and being fun, but it doesn't screw anything up timeline-wise, which is why, again, we've said this, this is the character to bring in from those Netflix shows. Like the Defenders storyline is a little bit harder to bring in, that there's this other dimension and giant hole that no one in New York knows about in the MCU, but just Daredevil and those characters, there are things like this that work. And by the way, this is the episode that includes the headline in the newspaper in the background, you know, that says Stark Tower ruined during Battle of New York. So there are things like that where it's tied, but not offensive to MCU truthers.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think that once we'll have to figure out what we want to do with Defenders, that may just be a one-off episode if we deal with it at all. But that'll be a bonus episode. I do because I'm just not even the completionist in me. I'm genuinely curious because that's one that I don't think I've rewatched at all. And I'm curious just from a Matt perspective. Like I want to remember kind of what they do there.
What I'm curious about is I truly don't remember how much of my hate is towards Defenders. Or this. Like, I don't remember how many more ninjas show up in this series.
Uh-huh.
So I'm excited to see that because maybe some of the Defenders ninja psycho stuff is bleeding into my opinion of Daredevil Season 2 unfairly.
I think that that does happen a little bit for me, the tail end of this and Defenders, because, I mean, so obviously the big hole in the ground is that we get here is the Defenders thing. Like, that's what the whole show is kind of based around. By the way, as an aside, one thing that I remember really disliking about Defenders that I've had to separate out from this is the way that Elektra is used there. One trope that I absolutely hate, I think the only time that I've been okay with it was with Hawkeye in the first Avengers, because in part we hadn't really gotten to know Clint, and that was sort of, and I know even Jeremy Renner fought that a little bit, but it was a creative way, I think, to kind of show his power set, show how he can kind of hold his own against the other Avengers if he needs to, and then kind of give him his own stakes in the fight. But generally, I just really hate the, okay, here's one character, we killed them off, and now we're going to bring them back, but they have a totally different personality because they've been brainwashed or because they've been resurrected in like a different way. And this all, like, this happened in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. too, whenever I was watching it. It happens in shows that run for long enough. And I just never, like, I'm like, either it's the same character and keep it, or kill them off and be okay with having killed them off.
And just give us a new character that does that new personality.
Like, and I get what they would say, well, you know, we're dealing with some of the comic stuff. And that's where, as a comic reader, I would say, yeah, maybe don't. You know, like, I see what you're doing, but we're in a show world. We're not in a comics world where you have to find ways to keep the same characters around.
Right.
So, but that's for later. Here, this episode ends with you finding out that Daredevil and Elektra, or Matt and Elektra, had this kind of emotional confrontation where she brought Roscoe Sweeney to Matt and kind of gave him the opportunity to kill the man that was responsible for his dad's death. Mm-hmm. And in the kind of modern times, we find out she sort of lured him to basically a fight, like forcing him to, like, she's got his suit and there's kind of there are people closing in and she's going to force him to help her. So that's kind of that's the most we get of Elektra here. So all of the kind of future stuff I was talking about aside, I'm curious to get your thoughts on, like, Elektra as we now have her.
Okay, can I ask you a question right away?
Yeah.
As a lifelong Daredevil fan, both of this show and the character in the mm-hmm. comics, how do you feel about Matt, Karen, and Elektra? Like, do you remember where you were at when you started seeing Matt fall for Karen? Mm-hmm. And because this is the chunk of episodes now where they're holding hands and they're whispering to each other at work.
Right.
And then balancing that with Elektra, her personality, like you're talking about. And uh-huh. then, you know, like the scene eventually when Karen walks in and Elektra's in his bed.
Right.
How am I supposed to feel?
Yeah. I mean, I do think that they're trying to capture the love triangle. And I think they do it reasonably well. And that isn't that, well, that's sort of an element from the comics. Those are Matt's two major love interests from the comics. I don't seem to remember many instances of them being like directly up against each other.
So when Matt first started with Karen, were mm-hmm. you all about it? This just works as a
in
fan.
The show?
I love this. Yeah. Yeah.
No, not really. It,
so what's off there? Is it Karen? Is it her performance? Is it Matt's performance? Is it the writing? Is it that we're not emotionally ready for him to be with Karen?
I think it's just the chemistry between them doesn't quite work. And man, it may be like Deborah Ann Woll is one of those people that I love how much she loves this series and her character.
Yeah,
and,
true.
And so, like, I sort of root for her in spite of the fact that I have just never found her performance to be super compelling. You know, I think we talked about the sum in season one. I think I found it the most compelling when we're first introduced to her and the end of season one when she's, like, after she shot Wesley, like, I think she does the dealing with trauma and dealing with, like, some a secret she can't tell to people, like, and the kind of paranoia thing I think she does really well. Mm. But the version of Karen that we get more in season two, I think I have even a harder time with.
Oh,
just because I just don't really, I can't figure out what the hook is. Like, I think
that. So then
that
what about Elektra then?
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you feel that instantly?
I think more, it's funny. I think that my, I'm realizing this on this watch through. I think my initial read of Elektra in the past was really colored by how much better they do it here than they did with Jennifer Garner in the movie. You know, where it was like just such a different take. I mean, that's not even shots at Jennifer Garner.
She's totally not manipulative in the movie.
Right.
And then here she's almost got this sinister side. I don't remember the movie ever questioning if she was kind of bad or...
Well, in the movie almost, it the whole thing is just kind of like she's the rich daughter of this diplomat and she's just like really into like Krav Maga. You know, it's like she's...
I'm talking the Daredevil really movie, by the way, because I've never seen the actual Elektra movie.
Oh, yeah.
There's a movie.
Yeah,
right? Okay.
Yeah, the Elektra movie is one of those that's... It's so bad as to be almost unwatchable, but I don't think that it has any like discernible lore that we can pull from it. But the movie, yeah, I think it's so different.
So what I can't figure out is when I watch this the first time, a lot of my notes are Matt and Karen, yuck, stop. and then like towards the end of this episode, I wrote, I hate Elektra and I don't love the origin. And I'm trying to think like, why do I not love either thing? And I've been trying to put my finger on that. I feel like with Karen, it almost feels a little out of place because I don't know if I've gotten enough Matt time where he is happy and joyful to where it's believable to me that he can just fall head over heels for Karen. So like the, you know, sitting in the rain, kissing you stuff, it just kind of feels like out of nowhere. I don't know, that, like for Matthew's perspective.
Yeah.
And then with the Daredevil stuff, I almost feel like Elektra is so obviously using him that he shouldn't be that unaware or dumb and let himself fall back into that. So when these chunk of episodes ends with him like giving himself back to her, it feels like, it doesn't, if that feels out of character almost for Daredevil because of all the stuff we had just seen and how she burned him last time and he's changed. And so I don't know. I watched this and I feel like neither thing fully works for me, even on a second watch. And I'm just trying to put my finger on that. That's all. I don't know. I don't know if there's some big revelation. It's not terrible.
Right.
Both relationships are, I don't know, a 6.5 out of 10 where I'm like, I wish this was better. But I can't put my finger on why.
I think I'm close to where you are there, actually.
And I bring that up so much because so much of this first episode is that. It's either the flashback with Elektra and, you know, what happened there and them doing it on the boxing ring thing. By the way, the only sex scene we get that's super intense. But then, you know, flashing forward to him trying to be with Karen and they go on the date and the date's not quite working like they want it to. And they go to the other restaurant.
Scene works for me. The Thai restaurant scene works for me.
Where she's like picturing it though. And then like some of the dialogue there's almost a little over the top too. Remember she says like, and the roof is just dripping with colorful. It's like, whoa.
Yeah.
Okay. And I think the other thing for me that just, again, I've said this before, I love that in season one, they reveal to Foggy that Matthew's Daredevil. Because I think that tension can only be drawn out so long. In fact, I actually think the original Raimi trilogy of Spider-Man is maybe the best version of how long you can draw out the identity thing without us believing it. And even I've complained where it's like, come on, she doesn't, you know, recognize that as him. This is like almost the worst case for me with Karen, where it's like we go 10 hours of Karen being so smart and like trusting Frank and diving into all this stuff with the bulletin, but she can't figure out that Matthew's got something else going on.
That's actually a really good point because she's like an investigative journalist.
Yeah, and it's frustrating that Matthew doesn't just say it at a certain point. At some point, I'm like, you're not protecting her anymore. She's still getting abducted every freaking episode. So it's not working. You might as well just tell her what's going on. I get frustrated with the miscommunication stuff. And I think that's my overarching point is I get frustrated with the hand stuff and I get frustrated with the miscommunication between the love triangle and I can't put my finger on why that doesn't work. End of rant. Sorry.
So I think it's interesting to go back to our last conversation about like what makes a good sequel because I think, you know, one of the fascinating things about that Raimi trilogy is it clearly ended in such a way that, you know, had they not had a sequel, you would have thought, oh, Mary Jane knows that he's Spider-Man. That's like what that last scene sort of tells you with her hand over her mouth. And then they found a way in Spider-Man 2 to utilize that really effectively, which is like it becomes clear that she kind of knows, but like on some subconscious level, and she's like the whole scene where she has like John Jameson like kiss her upside down. Like, I'm not saying all that works incredibly well, but it's like I think that at a high level it does, because you get she's not an idiot. She's just like dealing with this like, okay, is this like, can this actually be the case? And like playing with and then looking at Peter. And but here, yeah, like we don't get any of that tension. And so on that side, I think the sequel like doesn't carry that relationship forward in a totally satisfactory way. Whereas like I really like a lot of the Peter MJ moments in Spider-Man 2. However, what I think that this starts to do, whether you think this is good or not, is, you know, some of the stuff that like Iron Man 2 and like Age of Ultron do, where it's like, okay, that take on the sequel that is, this is what it looks like to be this kind of fully formed version of this thing, and these are maybe the unforeseen consequences of that. So like, yeah, now we have the Avengers together, but also like this is what happens when you have this like super team that has no real oversight. Or like in Iron Man 2, like, yeah, he's got this, but now he's got not only just like the health complications, but also like the bringing that kind of ego into this role that's unchecked. And so with Daredevil, I think that the show does a good job of showing how unsustainable it is. Like Daredevil season one ends with this like big win for the firm and a big win for Daredevil, you know, and it's like everything is looking so positive moving forward. Yeah, but I think, you know, this does a good job of showing like he does have to kind of pick. And so that's where I think the Elektra, Karen characters, like, it makes sense because those really embody, like you said, the two halves of who he is. Now, I know we're sort of moving on, so we can get to the next episode here in a second.
I mean, I'm looking at my notes. The reason we spend so much time on that is the episode. Other than that, before we move on, I just took a note that I enjoy seeing Foggy get a little bit better as a lawyer. You know, it continues that transition from total goofball in season one, and you're kind of like, how is he actually a lawyer? Like, how did he go through class? Because he's so kind of just, I don't even know what the word is, airheaded almost. No. And now I like seeing those steps. We got a taste of that in the last chunk when he stood up to Reyes. But I think this just continues it where he has to give the opening speech, and he does, and he does well. And him actually confronting Matt is a little more believable here because it's no longer just, Matt, you shouldn't do it because you're going to get hurt. It's the, you're actually hurting Karen and I and the job we're trying to build. So just get out of here. And that to me is all more believable.
Yeah. And which I'm excited to talk about, especially in the second and third episodes.
Yeah. But
that's true. I mean, that it starts here. The only other thing I was going to say about this episode is a lot of the flashback stuff did not work super well for me here. Not as I don't remember hair? That.
Is it that hair?
Yeah.
younger, cool hair.
the hair, the glasses being different.
I'm going to get his drinks.
it's and I will say, like, I made a note the reveal that we get in the last episode of this chunk, you know, that Stick has known Electra all along and that Electra was kind of sent on a mission to intercept Matt, actually retroactively makes this episode a little bit better because it makes it a little bit less cheesy to me that they just like meet at the bar and have this moment, because the whole thing just feels a little like, eh. But then with that, I'm like, well, I'm better with that. However, the execution of it is still like, it's not that it doesn't feel like Matt or that it's out of character. It's just that I don't watch that and have really any emotional connection to it, which is the problem.
And part of it is, whenever this show tries to paint a more lighthearted Matt, it just doesn't work. It doesn't work. And I'm actually really, really looking forward to Disney doing a better job of this. I think Charlie Cox as an actor and the writers for Disney are going to do a better job at figuring out how to embrace that side of it. Because this show, like when him and Foggy are in the kitchen and like it doesn't work. The young, like jokey Matt to me is so.
See, I can.
There's improvement there. Like, it's not going to be an all bad thing that Disney's going to get a hold of this character, because there are scenes this that you're like,
And see, it works for me at times. Like, I think that there are little like quips whenever Matt is in modern day form, some of the banter
it could be improved though.
Oh, for sure. And it never makes me laugh, right? Like, I either like, you know, it's like, which is a low bar for comedic lines, but I like,
aw, cool.
Right. I do think, that's a really good point as we kind of look ahead, because I do think that in the comics, not just the classic comics, but even the modern grittier ones, Matt has this like kind of debonair thing that I really like. Like, it's a little bit of like way, way, way toned down, but like a little bit of like Bruce Wayne meets Tony Stark, you know, where it's like grimmer, but he's got a confidence. Like in the comics, he's got this like brownstone, like this really nice place, like in Manhattan, you know, like he's like a big deal lawyer.
They're trying to do the Dark Knight thing when Bruce walks in with two girls around his arms and he's like owning the party and people are like, oh, it's Bruce, he's so weird. And like, but it's, I don't know, it's done so well there. The Tony Stark thing is obviously the perfected version of it.
Right.
And this here is, I don't know.
And it's interesting because in both of those, the Tony Stark one even more so, because, in Batman, it's a front, whereas like
the two sides of him kind of almost.
No. But I mean, like, to your point, like even in Iron Man, like I think it's like what Matt Berry said whenever he came on the podcast, 3 years ago now.
Stay tuned for maybe more of that.
Yeah. The genius of Robert's performance there is that character could actually be like repugnant, right? Like if it were played incorrectly.
Let's just pause really quick. Let's compare that first scene. The dialogue in the very first scene of Iron Man in the Hummer.
Yeah.
Compare that, whatever, 3 minutes to the flashback of Matthew Murdock as a younger Matthew in college.
Right.
It's not even comparable to me. It's not even close. Like,
no.
Tony Stark he is like a tool in the very first, I mean, the first question is about, has he slept with all the models?
Right.
And he makes a question about not knowing the girl was a girl. Like, totally a tool, inappropriate. And
talking about how, like, he, you know, yeah, like, peace, without, you know, peace, I'd be out of a job. Like, he's just, like, not a good guy.
But it's so funny, and you, like, care for him in the first 3 minutes, even though he's a jerk. I don't get it.
Yeah.
And this is lacking in that department.
And I don't mean that to say that it's Charlie Cox's fault, because I...
No.
But, like, I do... Yeah, I would love to see it. I agree. I think there's a lot of room. That's a good way of putting it. There's room for improvement there.
I actually think Charlie's very capable, so I'm excited to see it.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. And we did get a little of that even in No Way Home, and I'm excited for you to see the little added scene there, which is not a ton, but okay. So episode five, then, do you have a grade for this one?
I don't want to be hot takey with any specific answer, so I almost want to hear yours first. But
yeah,
it's I expressed some of my concerns. I guess I would say it's a that's fair plus.
Jeez. That's exactly what I did.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You know, that stuff just really didn't like it. To give context, I started in preparation for this. I started and stopped that episode like three or four different times. Like I watched that across multiple days, whereas the last three I watched all in one sitting.
Okay.
Just because it just took, I just was not connected to it. The things that I did appreciate there, I like the scene when Matt is going to follow Elektra and like listens to what's going on in the boardroom. Like I like seeing Matt like kind of going across the rooftops in that way. Like I just thought that was a nice kind of daredevil-y moment. And then, you know, I also appreciated the way that they pulled a lot from the Man Without Fear comic that Candace and I did the Comics Corner episode on with Matt and Elektra's relationship. Like, in the same way that so much of season one pulled from those elements of that comic when it came to like Matt's relationship with his dad and with Stick, they did the same here with Elektra. And it's part of why, like, on the one hand, I feel bad faulting them because there are things that are almost taken like panel for panel. But at the same time, whenever Candace and I were talking about that comic, that's one of the parts of that comic that I always was like, man, this is weird. Like Matt and Elektra's relationship here is just like, strange. Like it's like they're these like adrenaline junkie. It's like I just can't really relate to it.
Well, from the comics, they capture that perfectly well because, like, I wrote down again, there's so much drinking and again, so much alcohol. Right. And then in this case, even driving. I mean, it's weird to see Matt break into the house.
Yeah.
You know, like adrenaline junkie, like just going along with it, smashing all the stuff in the kitchen.
Right.
But I should add that the climax of this episode is pretty powerful and works for me as far as him having to confront Sweeney. Let's not miss that part.
Yeah, good point.
I do like that I feel like it paints the clashing that him and Elektra are always going to have in that how they view things. Very similar to the conversation he's had with Frank and how they deal with things.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I like seeing Matt, despite all the pressure from her, standing on his belief still of I'm not going to kill him. And it's really intense and well done. And I think an argument could be made that you probably could get away with killing him. And that's what makes it really well written.
Right.
And the same thing goes for the Punisher stuff, where it's like, you know, I understand the argument of what he's doing.
Yeah. And I think that argument works particularly well in a Daredevil context. You know, like that's sometimes used in Spider-Man world too, the like kill code thing.
And he's confronted with it less though.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and the only time I've seen it work really well, honestly, is in No Way Home because it's handled just so.
Oh, yeah. The deftly, very end. Yeah. Yeah.
The very end. But in terms of, in general, like, and that's, in part, that's showing you how far Peter's been pushed because we know that he's not that. But Matt is like, I think what's so compelling about it, and it's the same with like Bale's or Pattinson's Batman, like there's so much aggression there that you can see it. Like you can see how they're always having to hold it back.
Yeah. Well, and I was going to say his entire character is built on vengeance, just like Batman. Right, whereas Spider-Man's always from the perspective of protecting. So I think it's always a little bit easier to not kill people because you web him up and you've done your job. He's not like face-to-face with – like his core is protection.
Yeah.
Daredevil, I mean there's an aggressive – even like the moment where – like one of the coolest scenes ever in the first season is when he goes and rescues that boy who's being trafficked.
Right, right.
And he is protecting the child. That's the point.
Yeah.
But it's partially – I'm going to get vengeance on all the guys that are doing this to him. And that's a little bit different than Spider-Man.
And I think that there's also a, there's the element that is unique to Daredevil of the fact that Matt, sort of like what we got in this promo for She-Hulk, like when he's talking to Jen about, you know, like you can help people as Jen. And if that doesn't work, then you have the opportunity to help them as She-Hulk.
Yeah, sure.
That kind of cuts both ways, though, in that Matt is also aware of how broken the system is and the fact that even if he does, as Daredevil, like, present, for instance, like a Roscoe Sweeney, like, tied up and ready for the police to take into custody, there's still a good chance that, yeah, and he can still, he'll probably be able to pull some sort of strings. And so it's like Matt also is constantly confronted with the reality of the criminal justice system's failings, you know? So it's like you can add, you can imagine how that would add to that frustration as Daredevil and add to, like, there's a line to Elektra, I think in the third episode here, where he talks about how he has to make that decision at every moment, you know, over and over again. And I think that that's something that that feels very believable to me with Cox's performance.
Totally. So let's get into episode 6 then of Daredevil, season 2.
It's a new year, 2025, and you're probably thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How can I make this the best year ever? How am I going to build something for myself? I'm dying to be my own boss or see if I can turn this business idea I've been kicking around into a reality. But I don't know how to make that happen. Shopify is the key, and let me tell you how. The best time to start your new business is right now. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates. No coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. Shopify makes it easy to manage your growing business. They help with details like shipping, taxes, and payments from one single dashboard, allowing you to focus on the important stuff, like growing your business. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Established in 2025. Has a nice ring to it, doesn't it? Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle to start selling with Shopify today. shopify.com/redcircle.
15% off everything you can fit inside the bag is back at Menards. Make painting easier by using a one-coat product. Grand Distinction is an interior paint and primer in one that will give your home a fresh, updated look. Right now, get 15% off Pittsburgh products and all the painting supplies you can fit inside the bag through January 12th. See store for complete details. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
Yeah, so episode 6 was directed by Andy Goddard, who I thought at first might be directed to Drew Goddard, the creator of the show, but different Goddard, and was written by Sneha Khorsa. We're going to go with that.
Okay.
Again, a couple new names to the Daredevil world here.
By way of recap, not as much going on this episode either. Elektra and Matthew kick off the episode by fighting together. And so I should say Daredevil, if we're going to clarify that. But, and you kind of realize that maybe Elektra has some good in her or she's fighting for the right side at times. But Matthew's questioning how much of it is him being manipulated. Meanwhile, the big thing here is that Nelson and Murdoch are now going to represent Frank.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a big development. Foggy has the showdown in the hospital with Reyes. Where, like I said, Foggy's getting a little more liberty to be a better lawyer. And Karen kind of has the breakthrough with Frank in this episode where he will only talk to her. And ironically, it's her breaking into his house in previous episodes that is kind of the key to letting Frank open to her, because she has that picture and she can describe the house to him. And yeah, Foggy is mad at Matthew again because he's starting to have his Matthew lawyer side of his life unravel.
Uh-huh.
Meanwhile, Foggy and Karen are trying to work on the case.
This episode was a big jump up for me personally. In quality. I noticed that like in the moment, because I was just sort of thinking about how I was going to be talking about these. And after the first episode, I was like, and then this one, you know, in part, I love John Bernthal's role in this season.
He does a great job, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Wow.
It makes me like, I'm so conflicted because I've kind of gone on the record not, I think it's part of why I love it so much here. The Punisher works really well exactly the way that this season uses him, in my opinion. Like, they are always clear about the fact that what he's doing is wrong, which I think is important. Like, whenever the Punisher moves into, like, straight hero territory is when I'm kind of lost. But I think that the way that they're dealing with it and contrasted with Matt in this arc in particular, like, I love the decision to have Murdoch and Nelson represent him. I love that it's Matt's idea and then Matt flakes out, and what that shows about their relationship and where he's at. And like, it's so believable to me, like to your point earlier, that Foggy would be legitimately angry, like not just like worried about Matt, but now like you're making decisions for me and then you're bailing and like making me handle all the consequences of them. And
it's really similar to our relationship. That's why I think I resonate with it.
Yeah. Yeah. Who's the Reyes in our relationship?
Yeah. Candace. I'm just kidding. I'm kidding.
I do like it is. It's very.
Someone's got to be the Karen. Someone's got to be the Electra. Now I'm trying to think who's who.
Someone, some of our patrons
Pete,
can maybe Pete, take a stab.
Pete maybe is Reyes. Pete is Reyes. Just cracking the whip.
See, I was going to say maybe Pete was Karen. You and I have both had like little crushes on Pete at times.
That's fair. That's fair. But then I got to reel back the Candace one because I dislike Reyes and I don't dislike Candace. So
that all works well for me, even in the ways we were saying earlier, like the way that Matt is engaging with Elektra and having to engage with that part of himself that he's kind of been wrestling with anyway, but also sort of trying to push down. I think it's really well done here because Frank is another representative of that. Like you said, like Frank and Elektra are coming from similar philosophies and that they're both kind of taking down bad guys, but in a way that Matt's not comfortable with. And then Matt, you know, and getting back into this world with Elektra is towing that line himself. And then, you know, it all culminates in the final episode here in Matt's examination of Frank. But I think that's why this episode in particular jumped up. That on the like legal side, and then, you know, on the Daredevil and Elektra side. On the one hand, I get that the ninja thing can start to be a little bit much after a while. But at least at this point, I'm kind of willing to forgive it in that in
it's
this
fine
genre.
Here.
Yeah, well,
it's again, it's because every time I see it, it reminds me of what I know is coming with the Defenders.
Right. Right.
That's why. It's not that like having three ninjas attack Matt is that bad. No, it's cool.
Well, and it's if only because it gives you a lot of nice Daredevil fight scenes.
Sure.
You know, like it's like people make fun of the fact that the Avengers are always fighting against like some like either like nameless aliens or like nameless robots in each of the movies. But I'm like, you know, aside from the fact that like I don't have any issues with that plot wise, also just execution wise, like.
Do you ever feel like at this point the fighting starts to feel a little bit pointless? I've never been that person. Ever since Candace said that from the MCU, which I disagree with in the MCU front. On the Daredevil front.
You mean
front,
in Daredevil specifically?
In Daredevil, I feel like at this point in the middle of season two, some of the fighting starts becoming like, oh, we have to get some action in this show because we've had a 35-minute stretch with nothing. And some of the ninjas represent that, where it's like, well, let's showcase that Mac can fight. Here we go. I don't know. I'm comparing this again to Matt breaking out the child being trafficked in the first season that has like so much of a story purpose to it. And then the fight in the hallway is like unbelievable. And I would even say the plot is advanced in the fight of breaking out Frank in the first couple of episodes of season two down that hallway. And it ends up being a big thing because he kills another gang and that's, you know, causes a big stir, et cetera. With these ninjas, I feel like, okay, if he kills them all, what's the point? Like, we don't know who they are. We have no emotional connection to them. There's no real damage to the higher-ups of the Yakuza or whoever he thinks it is. No, it just feels like, okay, it's an action scene. I don't know.
That's a really good point. I think the other thing there is, and the argument can be made that this is intentional, but in the first season, there, like, the times when Matt was getting, well, at least the first time when Matt gets really beat up and he first meets Claire, it's because he's trying to save this kid. Like, I think that's around that time, like what you're referring to.
Because he saves the kid successfully. But it's around that time,
The second time is whenever he's going after Fisk and has the first fight with Nobu. And that's more on par with what we're dealing with here. And what I mean by that is I think what the Elektra character does effectively for Matt is show that it's not always a necessity thing. Like, I think Matt would like to believe that, well, look, you know, like, I know that I have these responsibilities to my partner and to the firm and to my client, but at the same time, you know, if someone's in danger, I have to help them. But I think what's interesting about these episodes is that's not really what's happening. Like, Matt's not going to help someone. He's not going to, like, even like on an Avengers level, like, intercept some like immediate urgent crisis. It's more Elektra being like, here's the chance, we can go take this gang down, and Matt just can't pass up on that opportunity. And I think that's interesting because, like, you could argue, well, that is, you know, he's preemptively saving people, but I think that
he does love the fight.
Yeah. And you know, like, I think there's a world where Matt could say, like, he does at one point, hey, like, I've got a thing tomorrow. Like, I've got work. I can't do this. And whenever he does that, Elektra's like, okay, well, tomorrow night then. But he's also more often than that, just kind of going for it. And then I think telling himself that it has the same kind of urgency that it has when he's saving someone. And I think that this is the process of Matt figuring out that he and Elektra are more alike, and he and Frank are more alike than he's maybe comfortable with or been willing to admit.
Yeah, and it's a little darker in that way than we're used to because, you know, we talked about how his superpower is that he can take a hit and he gets back up. Even in his fighting style, it's shown different than Thor, let's say, who also likes the fight. Thor, I think, likes the fight because he knows he's going to win.
Right.
Like, he's not really going to get hurt doing it.
Right.
I just watched Thor, by the way, in my rewatch, so that's what I'm thinking about. Oh, nice. But then Matthew almost sadistically likes getting hit.
Mm-hmm.
It's like it reminds him he can use his superpower, which is I'm going to outlast you in any kind of thing. But you're right. It does a good job of painting that picture where, she says we have a fight and he has, well, I have something to do tomorrow. And then it still ends up with her talking him into it because he can't really avoid it.
Yeah.
That's different. That's unique.
It is different. And I think it makes the relationships with Karen and Elektra interesting.
And honestly, it makes Foggy saying you're going to kill yourself even more believable a little bit because
he's being reckless.
Matt, of all characters, will go reckless to the point, well, he's a daredevil.
There you go.
He'll go reckless to the point of actually dying because he also doesn't have a whole lot of like physical abilities.
Right.
So yeah. If there is a character that's going to push it too far, it's him.
You know, what I did think was interesting here, and I think it was this episode, Elektra explicitly tells Matt that he's a better fighter than her, you know, like that he's the best fighter she's ever met, which is something I don't think comics Elektra would do, but I kind of, you know, I like little moments like that because we do see Matt take a beating so many times and get back up. And I like this kind of recognition that even Elektra, who is like this elite fighter, like puts Daredevil up on like a certain pedestal. But yeah, I think this episode, I did like the action. It worked for me there. And then I really like the way that it culminates again in the moment when Foggy tells Matt that they're moving ahead on trial. And even like,
sure.
Like this is where you start to really get those bits of like, you know, Matt's hiding the like new rich client from people, which is so shady. And if I were Foggy, I feel like I would be like, what, like we're partners. Like I should know about whatever client you're, this is so weird. Like, why are you not cluing me in on what's happening with this?
Sure.
But you know, so there's that tension, but then there's also like, you know, whenever Matt's like, okay, well, look, you know, we can move to extend, we can push the trial back. And Foggy's like, no, like, you don't get it. Frank already agreed. We're moving ahead. And it's like, you realize that, you know, had Matt been there, like had mm-hmm. Matt been a part of that conversation, maybe he would have been able to help. But instead he's just showing up every now and then and not really adding anything. And it's just like it's a great, I think like these four episodes, the pacing of that is handled well, like of the slow kind of unraveling of Matt's friendship and relationship with Karen and just professional role as a lawyer. Mm-hmm. It's like this, there is no way for him to be committed to this in the way that Frank and Elektra are and also be Matt Murdock. Like he has to, if he's going to do that, he is just Daredevil.
I think we both agree this is a slight step up. I'll probably just stay real slight and say, let's go minus.
Yeah, I enjoyed this one. So I went up to a let's go plus actually.
Okay.
But yeah, so a big jump for me.
All right. So episode 7.
So yes, episode 7 is titled Semper Fidelis. It was directed by Ken Garotti, and it was written by Luke Calto, who is a Daredevil alum. What's interesting, if I recall correctly, he wrote a lot of the kind of stick-heavy stuff in season 1, and I think maybe wrote some of Defenders as well. And so I remember at one point I was like, you know, whenever we see this guy, it's going to be a certain vibe, which is kind of true in this episode. But also, this is another one of the episodes that I really love because of the what's going on the courtroom side of things, which is to say, this is the episode that sees Matt and Elektra kind of go deeper into trying to figure out what's going on with the Yakuza / the Hand, and that essentially ends with them finding this massive hole in the middle of the city, which in fairness here, I actually thought like ending that episode was kind of a nice cliffhanger ending. Cause it's just such a like,
oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Holy cow,
I was
moment.
Laughing at something else. Sorry. That's great.
Well, but you know, like, cause we talk about later where that goes in Defenders and that's another part of that conversation, but
well, and that's what's fun about having my original notes is I had no idea what was happening. So some of my original notes make me laugh because we didn't know this yet. But yeah, the first time the hole is so cool because I was like, oh my gosh, what the heck is that?
Yeah, because it's on such a different scope than what we've seen Matt deal with.
I also wrote down, Matt is getting sexy with Elektra and I'm terrified Karen's going to walk in. That's what I wrote down the first time.
Yeah, you know, again, to kind of carry the thread forward, what I appreciate about this chunk of episodes is that these are some of the best, like, here's Daredevil in his Daredevil suit fighting, doing kind of like the what you would want from like a comic book adaptation. Now, I think that you could argue if that's at odds with the best storytelling the show does. Like, I think what's weird is the show is maybe at its best when he's not in his Daredevil costume, which sure. is sort of strange. And it's strange for me because I really love seeing, like, the comic book fan in me loves that and also recognizes the truth of what I just said.
Yeah, because he spends very little time in it in season 3.
Yeah, yeah. And even in The Defenders, if I remember correctly, I mean, he's wearing the, like, the scarf thing over his head for a bit.
Even that's an entirely fascinating discussion because we've had that discussion about Spider-Man on this podcast about, you know, right. we just haven't had very much time of him in his suit swinging around. And then I've had that discussion with myself a lot about Iron Man where yeah. like I say to Annika, like one of the things that turns me off about Iron Man 3 is mm-hmm. we just don't get a whole lot of him in his suit, which I get because they're trying to tell a story about how Tony Stark is Iron Man, not the suit.
Right.
But there's a part of me that's like, man, there's a part of me that likes Age of Ultron, him just being super powerful and having yeah. all the tech for every situation. Even though I know that's not a great story.
But that's what I think is so interesting about these conversations with sequels is like we always have the benefit, especially if, as often happens, you know, you kind of have like a great first offering, a mediocre second offering, and then it comes back for the third. Or, you know, Iron Man's a little complicated because he's so central to especially the early Avengers films that those play into his arc. But like at the same time, yeah, if you pull out those middle films or seasons, you know, here, like you miss out on some of the stuff that I think ultimately if you don't have, you never have a sense of what it looks like when Tony's like operating at that level for Iron Man 3 to then be what it is. And you know, same here with what season 3 is for Daredevil, sure. because so much of that is built around him kind of bringing himself back.
Right. And it's getting torn down and then building yourself back up. Like think Dark right. Knight Rises or whatever, but yeah. it's like, yeah, there's something fun about him being in his suit and being all powerful in the Dark Knight. You know, there is.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
kind of cool that he has all this stuff.
And that's, I think we said like the Dark Knight and Winter Soldier are the ones that did that so well.
Well, you've always brought up the point with Age of Ultron, right? You got to see the team operating at peak right. levels to get the why they're being torn apart in Infinity War thing. Or,
right.
But even on individual character levels, yeah, it's fascinating. And by the way, you just have to add that I guarantee you another factor is that all of these actors can't uh-huh. fully portray their emotion behind right. a mask. So yeah. they're trying to find ways to get Spider-Man's mask off. Mm-hmm. I think that's a lot of reasons why, like, you get to a big fight and they'll, like, pull their mask off. It's like, why would you do that? This is the right. least safe time to do it. Well, it's like, well, they want to show you their emotion. I just watched the assembled of Thor Love and Thunder. And one mm-hmm. of the takeaways I had was Christian Bale had to go through 3.5 hours of makeup for gore. Hmm. And Kevin Feige in the assembled specifically said the reason they did that and they changed the character design from the comics is because they didn't want to have Christian Bale there and then CGI his look
yeah.
and have to motion capture Christian Bale. They wanted to find yeah. a way to have Christian Bale actually be doing it. And so it's just fascinating, right? It's like right. even the Daredevil fighting stuff, I guarantee you season 3, it's not just about him getting his power back and being broken down. It's probably they also want to showcase right. Matthew and Charlie Cox's performance too.
Oh, no, for sure. Which, yeah, I mean, with RDJ, like how are you going to have RDJ? And
well, that's why they were genius in giving us the inside right. the helmet camera because they wanted to still have RDJ being that person.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And you can even see that in Love and Thunder with how often they have Jane's helmet off and the fact that, like, I'm always struck by in that scene, I'm not going to go on this tangent, but the fact that, like, he pulls off the helmet physically, but hers always does the, like, MCU, like, disappear thing. Mm. I think because they wanted to probably make it easier for her to be helmetless all the time.
Right. I just watched Iron Man 2 in the very end when they're like going to blow up Mickey Rourke's character by meeting in the middle with their things. Uh-huh. He takes his helmet off. He's got them right. both. He's got them both lassoed and they're in full Iron Man outfit. And it's like, there's no actual practical reason for him to lift his mask there. Just talk to him with it down.
No, it's true. That's a good point.
But I think they truly do want his face shown is why they're doing it.
Right.
Anyways, I had another tangent, a mini revelation while you were recapping this episode.
Oh, yeah. Hit me.
It's minor. But I was thinking about this kind of starts this trajectory of two stories that are totally isolated from each other, both plot-wise and tonally. And it makes me think about, like, Ms. Marvel. How Ms. Marvel had, you know, the two sections of it, where you had the high school vibe and then a totally different, like, clandestine, supernatural feeling thing. And I thought to myself, maybe that's part of my thing with Daredevil season two, the middle chunk, is that you have the trial of Frank Castle and then this totally, tonally different thing of Matthew as Daredevil fighting ninjas in this giant hole. And I think they would probably argue that's the fun of it, is that Daredevil's a different character than Matthew. Okay? Here's my point, though. I guess I wonder how the effectiveness of that storytelling technique, I think, just fully depends on how well do they wrap up together. Like, Ms. Marvel failed on that because I don't feel like we had a massively successful tie-up of the clandestine thing, like, satisfactory.
Right.
Then her tie-up on the high school front was awesome. And I thought, is this maybe just not possible? Because the climax of Frank Castle and that stuff works so well, but it doesn't ever fully weave in to the Daredevil stuff he's going through. Like, that, it's not like there's a big revelation of those two plot points coming together to me. And I thought to myself, maybe it's just not that possible. And then, you know, I thought of one of the best examples of this is the Spider-Man PS4 video game. Because I think while you're doing the game, you have these totally different things. Like, you're working with Doc Ock, and it's like very, really playful. And it's Peter trying to be a scientist, and it, you know, it's nothing supernatural. And then you have a storyline with Martin Lee that gets like really weird, like going to another dimension. And you're fighting like dragons of him, and you're like, this doesn't make sense. Like, it's so totally different. But the kicker is that game takes all those things and it brings them all to a head, perfectly woven together, to where you're at the end going like, oh my gosh, I feel everything Peter's feeling, because all these sides of him are hitting one climax. So I think it is possible. I just don't know that it's done perfectly well here again.
No, that's a good point. I've always said, I think the other elements of the movie aside, I've always felt that was one thing Guardians 2 did pretty well too, making all of the different like storylines in that movie come together in a way that makes sense, like where they use the batteries to blow up Ego and all this, the Harbulary batteries. But anyway, no, I think that's a really difficult thing to do. And that's a good point. Like, we talked about there being arcs, but there is still the level of like, there's just this ongoing ninja thing with Daredevil that's happening in the background that's clearly heading towards Defenders. And it's, I think that I'm willing to forgive the degree to which it doesn't integrate here because of the reasons I said earlier with the Elektra and Frank dynamic and how they're kind of tempting him in the same ways. And I like the effect, like here's an example in this episode of, I think, them crossing over effectively. Granted, this has nothing to do with the ninja stuff, but a couple things. One, Elektra sneaking into his house and overhearing his conversation with Karen and kind of making fun of it actually kind of worked for me, because I thought, one, that she's so cynical, or at least projects the cynicism. Two, Matt and Karen's relationship, like, I also kind of want to make fun of it, like you were saying. Like, they're like, it doesn't really hit for me. And this, I even had the same thought whenever they're like at the fancy restaurant and she's like, I know this place, like, they have wine, and they're going and like eating Thai food and like drinking this wine. And the fact that like that becomes their thing, which is just not like a supernatural combination flavor wise. And so I kind of love
not pasta and wine.
Right. Like, I love that Electra makes fun of that. Like, she's like, I didn't know that your time, like, pairing wine and Thai food was so meaningful to you.
Yeah, true.
And so that stuff was good. But then the element of her, and you don't even realize it in the moment, but her overhearing the conversation with Karen and then her kind of taking matters into her own hands and screwing over Matt and Foggy and Karen's case because she injects the Daredevil world too much into the Matt Murdock world. Like, and again, it shows what a delicate balance it is and how Matt is having to always like why he's always in disarray and unable to balance it well is because it's almost impossible to do. And so you see Elektra here and she even says like, I'm doing what you do. Like you, what you can't get, you just take at night. And
true.
I like seeing Matt's reaction to that in the courtroom, the conversation he has with Foggy, when again, you get that really righteous, deserved anger from Foggy. And you get like, you know, I know you've said before that Annika, when she's watched this with you, is always questioning the degree to which we're supposed to really like Matt.
Yeah, she doesn't like Matt. And episodes like this are partially why, I think.
But you know, I kind of appreciate it. Yeah, it adds some complexity to the character. Like, I think sometimes not often, but the complaints about characters in the MCU being one note, I think this sort of belies. Like, I really liked that bathroom fight, even though I was like, y'all probably should not be talking about this loudly in a public space.
I thought that for one second, too. Like, Karen didn't hear that? Right. Karen couldn't hear that? She was outside.
But I also the moment when I did, this is one of the few moments that I thought was actually funny in the show. And like, I didn't laugh because it didn't really merit it. But whenever Foggy's like, wait, Elektra, like your college girlfriend? Like, yeah, what are we talking about right now? Because Matt's like going down this whole road and he's like, but then the Yakuza, and Foggy's like, what are you talking about?
It's
also like, how you feel a little bit whenever you're not feeling the ninja stuff, when it's like,
yeah, totally.
what are we doing here? So I like that. But what I was talking about with the Matt character element is he doesn't just acknowledge the fault there. Like there's a version of Matt in the past that I think would have said like, you know what, you're right. I'm sorry. This is on me. And Matt, like where Matt is as a character at this point, he's not there. Like he pushes back. He's like, don't walk away from me. Like he's getting he's like the aggression is.
Yeah. Yikes.
Coming to that the line. Forefront, you know?
So totally agree. A couple other things to add just because it is a step up for me. I like Karen and Frank kind of developing a relationship. Again, John Bernthal is clutch. I buy some of those emotional moments there. As I mentioned before, I like seeing Foggy take some more initiative when he has to deliver those opening comments. And then the bathroom fight, yeah, I totally, other than the fact they're saying it too loud, totally buy all of Foggy's anger. It's the first time I feel like maybe where Foggy's anger feels so justified and warranted and wanted, like I want it.
Right.
And
yeah.
You feel for him because he is doing all of it. Yeah,
like, he could be, if like he would be justified in being more of a jerk than he even is at this point, like based on what Matt's kind of
totally
the situation he's put him in.
And then I think the love triangle stuff is working better here, like you're saying, than it has in the past. I think the reason Annika doesn't like Matt, she always brings up that he's mean to Foggy and Karen, that like he abandons his friends, which he does, but then there's also a little bit of Matt, you're letting Elektra do these things. Like you're obviously taking steps towards you guys getting closer. All the while, again, if you feel that way, just tell Karen then. Like that's not fair to be having both relationships. Right. And so he might ask like it's nothing, but man, they love zooming in on those scars and like touching them on each other. And it's like, okay, you're shirtless and she's pantsless.
On hey, platonic. The couch, like, it's platonic.
It's just like, okay, Matt, make bad decisions. Bad things are going to happen. That's what's happening right now. You're making poor decisions. So I think it's a step up. I'd say it's still not to the level of the Frank episodes, the first four, and it's not really fully for me to the level of most of season one. Definitely not season three. So I'm going to move it up to a Let's Go now, I think.
Yeah. This one is another Let's Go plus for me for the reasons we just said. I totally agree. The one thing that I wanted to note is I have the Wikipedia summaries of this pulled up just to refresh our memories of what happened in each episode. And I love that the summary of the plot from this one ends with inside they find a giant hole.
Yeah, exactly. Look, this is such a fascinating discussion as we move into episode 8 because it is, again, what we've been saying, where it's like, I think the hole was kind of cool the first time. I don't think I minded the ninjas the first time. It's just I know where it's going, so it's coloring all of my opinions.
Yeah.
I'm trying to go back to, if I don't know where this is going, I think the amount of ninjas, the hole, it's all fine. It's all right. I think they're making the right call thus far. Now let's talk about episode 8, because episode 8 is where they start trying to kind of tie that together. Stick shows back up.
Well, yeah. So episode 8 is called Guilty as Sin. It was directed by Michael Uppendahl, written by Whit Anderson. Yeah, this is a fascinating one. Out of this whole chunk for me, most fascinating, because it gives me some of my favorite Frank side moments and also some of my least favorite, like, hand.
So
stuff.
Matthew and Elektra are losing their fight, and lo and behold, Stick shows up and helps them. This is the crazy arrows, right? Ninjas are running across the roofs at the speed of the car. Elektra is seriously injured, and they take Elektra back to Matt's apartment, and that's where, while we're getting the Frank trial, we're also seeing Matthew kind of rekindling his feelings for Elektra, that maybe she's actually good and he's the only one that's ever believed in her. Mm-hmm. And more importantly, Stick finally telling him this is the war and what that means. And then the crazy, shocking, I thought, cool ending to the episode of Frank getting on the stand and being pressured and actually saying, I'd kill them all again, and going the whole place going crazy. Dude. And Matthew and Karen and Foggy butting heads on that fact, and then figuring out that it's largely because Fisk is the person who wants to meet Frank.
Yeah.
So a lot happens here. And again, this is where you can kind of close chapter 2. Like, this is where we're now going to do another story for the final bit of this thing, because Fisk is going to be involved a little bit more.
Yeah.
We're going to go from there. But I want to go back real quick. I'm trying to even put myself in the shoes when Stick tells Matthew that it is the war.
Oh, right.
And the blue sky. I think still.
Black sky.
When I saw it, I think the first time I thought it was okay. Because I think my reaction was like Matthew's, which is like.
That's huge.
Okay, you're crazy.
Yeah.
And stop telling us a fairy tale. And I think I would have loved the show to stay in that realm. Of Stick is actually living in this like fairy tale world, but he's bringing his like ideals over to Elektra and Matthew. And I think that could have been a really cool story, but lo and behold, he's actually telling the exact truth. And that's where I'm like, okay, the show has never dealt with that stuff. The whole first season and the whole first chunk of season 2 is very practical. It's this military guy who lost his family. He's on like a killing rage, a killing spree. And the whole first season is Matthew doesn't have superpowers, and you're learning about his origin of a boxer and his dad, and Fisk is just manipulating the police and the government, and like nothing feels out of place. And then we get to this episode, and he tells them about the war and this hole they're digging to another dimension. And it's like, what? No.
Yeah.
And it's so weird because it's so juxtaposed like Ms. Marvel to this incredible trial. Where it's like, you had it right there. You have the whole story. You have all the pieces in place. Just run with it. And I can't get over how strange it is that they steer this other direction for the last few.
Well, and it's so interesting to, you know, like this season predates Doctor Strange, right? So like we didn't have any kind of any kind of mystical elements in the MCU yet, So to do that on this level now,
in the show, yeah,
it feels like it really messes with the dynamic that they were trying to go for, where like, yeah, these are the things that like the big like marquee MCU superheroes wouldn't, you know, like what is Iron Man going to do to Wilson Fisk, right? Like that's not even really, it's not about who.
He'd laser him one time and that'd be it.
Right. But like the problem is the corruption that Fisk represents, right? Like it's not just the fact that. And so, but here, you know, it starts to get into like, okay, I really feel like this is becoming like an Avengers level thing, but it's so tonally, like it's discordant with that.
I see what you're saying. This is where it starts getting a little off the rails that the rest of the MCU is not involved. The whole is like, okay, maybe it's just a construction error. But by the time it gets to there's actually a war going on, yeah. Time to call Tony Stark. Anyways, there are a few things that I do like from this episode, though, that are worth pointing out. Like I said, the actual trial itself is so cool. You know, Karen walks in to Matt's apartment and sees Elektra. So the love triangle thing that I've been hinting at does come to a head. It does fall apart, which kind of symbolizes Matthew realizing his relationship with Karen is unsalvageable in a romantic way, at least. She plays it like tough. Like, I don't care whatever you're doing, whatever, but you're still screwing Foggy. And the trial side of things, and kind of guilts him there. But I love the trial scene. I literally wrote the first time. It's one of my favorite scenes thus far in the courtroom. And one of the reasons I loved it is I love Matthew treating the witness as hostile and then going on this kind of out of nowhere speech to everyone else where it's like, the world needs heroes. This city needs heroes. But he's almost talking directly to Foggy and Karen.
Right.
You know, because no one else, like, Frank is not a full hero. So that's not a great way to go about it if you're trying to actually prove that Frank is innocent or whatever. You see what I'm saying? It's moment he realizes he's lost the case, but I'm still going to get my message across to them. So I do really love the culmination of all of that coming to a head there. And I think it's done really well, especially the Foggy, Karen, and Matthew side of things. And Matthew, after everything that's gone down with Elektra, having to argue in this, like, via a courtroom scene with Karen and Foggy about what he's doing, like, why he's still doing what he does.
Yeah, and I think that does work really well with what's happening on the other side of this episode.
On the other side of things, Elektra has this big confession about, you're the only one that's always seen good at me. How have you not been corrupted? You're so good. They have this moment, you're like, oh gosh, okay, he's choosing Elektra. They don't even let us sit there for more than 15 seconds.
Right.
And he walks out, gets attacked. She comes out, slits the kid's throat, and it's already over. And I get trying to get to the end fast, but it feels a little bit like Dark World where it's like, can you just let us, like, them be a couple for one episode then?
Like that would have been a great, like, give us an episode or two of her trying.
Yeah, she comes out and goes, this is just who I am. I'm like, wait, 15 seconds ago, you had made up your mind the other way.
Yeah, I do. The two halves of this episode, since we're moving away from the courtroom thing, I did love, before I forget, I love just seeing Matt in that role. You know, like, we haven't seen, we haven't gotten that many courtroom moments with him.
Correct. Even though he's a lawyer, yes.
Right. And two, you know, what was your take on, like, I didn't feel, he was clearly importing some personal stuff there, but Foggy was, I thought Foggy's anger was not as justified there. Like, especially knowing what Matt knew, like, Matt was able.
At the very, very end when the trial falls apart?
Yeah. Yeah, there.
Totally not justified. Though we had him and you could have just done this, that thing.
Yeah.
And you took it a different way. He didn't do it. Matthew didn't do it.
And I guess, you know, in Foggy's defense, he didn't know what we know. But, like, Matt heard the guard make the comment to Frank. And so I think at this point, Matt knew that, like, something was up. Well, and even Karen says, like, something's not right.
Well, they do kind of look at each other like, oh, this is weird. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And I thought Matt actually, like, I think the takeaway was supposed to be the jury's kind of buying it. And that's why Frank has to, in the last moment, kind of tank it, because Frank, for reasons we don't know at this point yet, wants to go to prison. So
conversely, though, I bought him saying to Karen, "Karen, can you just stay here for one freaking second?"
And then, yeah.
But then I also conversely bought her reaction, which mm-hmm. is like, if he's not going to tell her what's actually going on, what's the point?
Right. Yeah.
He's not going to say that he's Daredevil.
Yeah.
She knows that. So then why turn around and talk to him about it? Because he's just going to say, like, "Karen,
yeah.
you have to trust me. You got to sit here with me." She's like, "No, it's not working."
Yeah, 100%. I would have been really frustrated if she had played ball there. Like, if she had been like, "Okay, yeah, you know, like, I trust you," like, yeah, after what's yeah. gone on. I also, yeah, I mean, John Bernthal's performance there, and it's like a,
yeah.
it's a gif moment now. Like, I liked it. I loved it. But that's great. Just like giving off the like crazy vibes. Like,
help me out because I'm stupid. What actually went down there? He was going to go on the stand and tell the truth and play ball with Matthew originally, and was going to say, like, I'm a victim. I've had problems, mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah. That's what he was going to do. But then the cop whispered, "Don't forget our deal." And then you're saying he wanted to go to prison, so he knew I had to say something to go to prison? Or is that his true self coming out? What happened, actually?
I think it's Frank. I mean, I think we're supposed to recognize the whole time he was a little uncomfortable with ever being painted as a yeah. victim. Yeah, just because from his perspective, he's like, "No, I feel like I'm in control. I know what I'm doing. Like, it's not fair to people that aren't." And it's also like, you know, like, I don't want this to come off as something that I – like didn't have a choice in. Like, I believe that what sure. I'm doing was right. So, but I do think he was at a point where he was going to be comfortable at least telling people what happened to his family, because, you know, that furthers his own narrative of like, these people are terrible and they deserve what was coming. And, but I don't remember what the full dynamic is, and I need to finish the season to remember. But like, I think he has found out for some reason that, or has, you know, Fisk has gotten word to him that it's worth his while for some reason to meet with him. And I think Frank in that moment knows that, like, on one level, he wants to explore that. I think on a deeper level, because I don't think Frank, like, trusts Fisk or is any way, like, wanting to get involved with Fisk.
Well, and he doesn't. We find that out.
Right. But I think Frank does, I think he wants to wind up where he ultimately does, which is he doesn't want to be, like, he would rather break out and just be a fugitive and keep doing what he's doing. And I think that he realizes, like, there's no use in going down the, like, rehabilitation road. But I think that they're, like, I'm curious to see how much they explain what exactly was happening there. But I've definitely taken it as not him. Like, I don't think that's his real self showing through. I think that's him intentionally kind of acting out to get what he wants. And I think that's why we get that moment with him and the guard. But I just don't remember. I mean, do you remember exactly what the nature of Fisk's proposition is? Like, I feel like I remember it ending up with Frank getting loose. But that's all that I really remember.
Well, I love that we don't, right? Like, let's not talk about that because true. I actually don't fully remember. I remember liking that Frank stands up to Fisk as far as, like, he's the first person I can remember that isn't totally just manipulated by him. He's like,
right.
I don't.
Right.
But yeah, where that actually goes is only like 50% clear in my memory.
And those are great. I mean, those are great characters to see together in this show. And I almost wish that we could have gotten more of that. But anyway, on the other side, what I was going to say is as we wrap, like, I did like the interaction there, though, right? Because as Matt's, on the one hand, having that impassioned speech that you talk about where he's saying, you know, there's a need for people like Frank. And then he says he went too far, but, like, he's a good man. He's doing the right thing. And to talk about that while he's also weighing, like, can I be with Elektra? Like, is Elektra really so bad? And then for him to have that moment and then her do the throat slashing, which I agree came too early, but it's like, they are at least, they're dealing with the same theme. And I think that that's handled well. The fact that they did all of that in the same episode where Stick is explaining this whole mythology is what to me brought this episode a little bit down for me. Just it's like, okay, there's a lot going on here in this like 50 minutes.
Sure. And that's why this is probably the hardest one for me to grade, because to me, Matt, Foggy, Karen, Trial, Punisher, Courtroom, that's like a let's freaking go.
Yeah. High highs.
Some of the Elektra stuff is probably in the middle. And then the Stick, the ninja shooting with arrows, the explanation of the war is like a missed opportunity. So I don't know how to grade it.
I'll
say a let's go minus.
Yeah. I'm going to give this one a let's go. The other thing that I liked here was that Elektra got hurt because Matt stopped her from killing the person. Like, that was another interesting dynamic is like, you know, his insistence on his own code could have killed her.
Yeah, true.
There were some interesting things. I just think that this is one of those cases where, like, they probably could have pulled this into a later episode, potentially. But
so there you go.
Yeah, there's part two.
So part two of our Daredevil coverage of season two will be covering episodes 9, 10, 11, 12, and 13. And that will take us all the way through the end of season two. We're really looking forward to finishing that and getting into season three as well, which is some of Robbie and I's favorite television.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's been really fun. I actually, like I said at the beginning, I've had a lot of fun coming back to this after only seeing it one time. This is not the same as watching Iron Man. I've seen it 100 times. This is a different experience for me. So I don't fully remember how this wraps up. I remember a scene on the roof where they're fighting a bunch of ninjas, but I don't remember a ton of stuff in between there. So I'm excited for that. And then next week, I think Robbie and I are trying to put out a new kind of episode for us, which will be fun, of just maybe a few other things we're into, have nothing to do with the MCU. And we can give a couple of impassioned takes on what we're enjoying in life right now.
Yeah.
And then I'm just giddy with excitement because we're cooking up some stuff on the Friends from Work side. Mm-hmm. Robbie killed an interview with the director of She-Hulk last week. So if you want to see that you can check out last week's episode. And I'm excited to see Matthew in the MCU.
Yeah.
I'm excited for a few new outlets for us. I don't know. Good times right now.
Well, and, you know, talking about season three of Daredevil, I think the timing for that could wind up being really fun. And, you know, the conversations about that season, which pulled so much from the Born Again comic and the series that's coming out that's called Born Again. So a lot of fun Daredevil stuff on the horizon.
So thank you, especially to you guys, our patrons, who have not only listened to the podcast, but supported us financially and joined us on the Friends from Work Plus side. It's been an honor and we've had so much fun doing it. Stay tuned for more stuff. A lot of stuff coming. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time on Friends from Work Plus.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.